I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Save big money with help from Menards. Stay cool this summer with portable air conditioners from Polonis. Featuring multiple comfort settings and built-in thermostat, they're easy to install, come with a remote, and are available in several models suited to your specific cooling needs. Take control of your comfort with Polonis products at Menards. And check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? How are you feeling about your Celtics being in the NBA Finals?
Yeah, it's an exciting time right now. And, you know, as we're recording this, game one's going on. They've got an 18-point lead in the second quarter already. Feeling good about that. Yeah, obviously we're not going to talk a lot of basketball here, but I do like this matchup for the Celtics. I think this is, you know, it's been a pretty easy run as far as, you know, playoff runs go, but you know, whatever, it's we'll take what we can get, and it's not like this is any less deserved because of the opponents they've played. So yeah, I think they have a, you know, I think this is a 5 maybe 6 game series where Boston wins. Hopefully they can keep this thing going. Porzingis looks good, though. I'm excited about that. He looks healthy out there.
All right. There's your basketball talk for the day. That will end that. I've tuned out basketball for the last few years until the Warriors are playing in the playoffs, and that was not the case this year, so I was not watching. So that's been my basketball intake this year. But no worries, we are here to talk baseball, and more specifically, as always, bullpens and relief pitchers. And today we're going to be discussing, as always, the news, notes, and injuries and transactions from the past week. We'll discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks, and then we'll cover some mailbag questions from our own Pitcherless community. If you'd like to provide us with mailbag questions in the future, sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro so you can have access to the Discord to provide us mailbag questions, or feel free to just shoot us questions on Twitter or DM us, whatever you want, whatever fashion or avenue you want to use to get us some questions to answer on the podcast. That is definitely something we can do and something we are going to do today. But we'll start it off with that first section, the news and notes, starting with the news. Right-handed reliever from the Mariners, Andrés Muñoz, has been dealing with a lower back issue. He's yet to be placed on the IL, and he did undergo an MRI, but the results have yet to be revealed. So it's unclear right now the severity of the injury, but it just sounds like he might be on the bench for the weekend.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he gets back this weekend. He threw today. I don't know. It sounds like there wasn't any sort of setback or anything. But yeah, they could play it safe here. There's no real reason to rush him back. But it does sound like he could be available this weekend. So I guess this is like, you know, an interesting dilemma for if you're in like a weekly league where you can update your roster on Friday and make pitching changes. I think I probably would sit him. And, you know, if you can get Ryan Stanek for the week, if that somehow works, that's, you know, that's the perfect solution. But I don't. Yeah, it's I think it does. It makes sense for them to just kind of hold off and see where things are at after Sunday.
Totally. Yeah. And if you're in a deep save plus holds league, I think Taylor Saucedo should be an option and probably is available on your wire. He's probably available because he only has one hold this year and he hasn't pitched that much, just 15 innings, but he does have two saves, including getting one recently on Tuesday. And if a save opportunity comes up and Munoz isn't available and the bulk of the hitters coming up in the ninth inning are lefties, expect Saucedo there. Otherwise, it'll be Stanek if Munoz is unavailable. The other bit of news we have is righty closer Edwin Diaz of the Mets has begun a rehab assignment and is expected to return in the minimum time. I cannot remember exactly which day he landed on the IL. I'm going to pull that up so that I can remember which day exactly he'll return. But I think he went on the 25th. Which
sounds right. It's retroactive to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think 15 days after that, it's like the
early
the
next ninth. Week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be the ninth, which is Sunday. So yeah, Sunday or Monday, Edwin Diaz will be back and that'll be awesome. And especially for the Mets, because they've really been struggling without him, using Jake Diekman a lot in the ninth inning.
Yeah, and Garrett's been fine lately, but everyone else they've put out there, it's, you know, every time you look at the box score from a Mets game recently in the ninth inning, it's like the other teams scored 2-3 whatever, you know, amount of runs. It's like they can't just close the door. It's not like Diaz was helping before, obviously. It's been a problem no matter who's been closing out games. But, yeah, hopefully Diaz can get a couple, you know, maybe two more. He pitched tonight. Probably gets one or two more, you know, outings, hopefully get his confidence back. Hopefully he's feeling all right. And he won't pitch Sunday because they're in London. I don't think he's traveling with them there. So, yeah, hopefully early next week he's back.
Yeah, that'll be awesome, especially after that trade I made. I've been really needing Edwin Diaz back. But I think it's good that the rest of the relievers have struggled in the ninth inning, because we know Edwin Diaz has not been his self recently. And I didn't really expect him to return to having the closer role taken from him, but there was an opportunity for that to happen if one of the three guys, Garrett Ottavino or Diekman, stepped up and took over that role and really dominated, then maybe they slowly work Diaz back into that role, because they're paying him to be the closer. He's going to be the closer if he's healthy. But if he's not pitching right, then they might have had a reason to keep somebody else in there. But this gives me confidence that he'll return right back to that role. Looking in the Mets bullpen, though, I just caught a glimpse of Daniel Nunez, who is a rookie right-hander and has really surprised thus far with a 2.31 ERA across his first 11 and two-thirds. And that comes with a 42.2% strikeout rate. He's got a decent fastball that he throws 53% of the time. Decent in terms of stuff and velocity. He throws 96, and the IVB is solid at 16 inches, and he's got good vertical approach angle. However, the PLV on that pitch is in the 95th percentile, and he's got a slider that's been getting a ton of swinging strikes. Do you think this is just like a small sample thing for Nunez, or is he a guy to keep an eye on as a 28-year-old rookie?
It could be. He's been an interesting, option. The Mets have, I don't know how many times he's been up and down this year, but when I'm looking through advanced metrics and stats, his name always pops up in the, you know, strikeout percentage leaderboards or swing strike or whatever it may be. He always just only has like 5 innings pitch, 10 innings pitch, whatever. But they keep, I think, you know, maybe now he's up for good. Hopefully, I want to see a little bit more. I want to see obviously like a full month of, data from him to see if this is real or not. But everything checks out as far as, you know, like you said, the stuff, you know, the stuff is good. The stuff ratings are good. It's just, you know, let's see if this can last. But yeah, there's definitely openings after once Diaz gets back, you know, it's Diaz, Garrett, and maybe Drew Smith's kind of locked into a setup role. And then after that, I mean, Ottavino's really struggled recently. Deacon's been struggling. So there could be some saves appeal here with or holds appeal with Nunez here.
Yeah, that's Daniel Nunez. And now we'll transition to our injuries. The first one we have is right-handed reliever Lucas Urseg of the A's, who was placed on the 15-day IL with right forearm tightness. Danny Jimenez was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Urseg had been the team's top setup option and the team's top option for vulture saves when Mason Miller needs a day of rest. And he actually pitched really well this year, 2.86 ERA, 31% strikeout rate. So forearm tightness is never an injury you want to see, and is sort of concerning with someone like Urseg, who likely never underwent Tommy John surgery as a guy who came up as an infielder or an outfielder, one of those. He was a hitter. That's the most important part. But I think it would make sense that he had never undergone Tommy John surgery. And I think I may be wrong here. This may just be anecdotal, but it feels like guys who have yet to undergo Tommy John surgery are likely more at risk of that.
I think so. Especially like nowadays, guys throwing that hard, it's like his age. But again, like you said, he was mostly a position player, so he might have skipped that part of getting his Tommy John over with early. It does sound like he is progressing though a little bit. 6 days ago, he was playing catch, so he's not shut down. That's good. That's a good sign. But yeah, it's something to keep an eye on, I guess, long term. Because he throws so hard.
And when it's like you're coming up as like a newfound reliever and you're throwing 99, that's got to be max effort. And it's like a new strain on your arm that it hasn't really experienced before. So it would feel like he would be more at risk of undergoing a significant surgery.
Yeah, I would imagine. But it's hard to predict those things. You never know. Maybe he's able to, miss that injury bug. But for now, it looks like, he's got a chance to come back sooner rather than later. That's good. But yeah, long term, it's, more of a shaky play, I guess.
Yeah, that's Lucas Urseg. In his absence, Austin Adams will be the top option for holds in Oakland. He's already up to 15 holds on the year. He's been really good. And Danny Jimenez, the guy who was recalled in a corresponding move, also seems to be a guy that's going to be immediately plugged into high leverage situations. He got a save in one of his first appearances after being recalled, and that was pretty interesting. Though he was a guy who was a temporary closer in the past for the A's and has always pitched high leverage, it was sort of confusing why they sent him to the minors earlier this year, but he's back and I think they'll trust him, though I don't think he's much of a fantasy option because he doesn't strike anybody out.
Yeah, I mean, is it really that confusing? I mean, he's okay. He's not that good.
It was just like a guy that they trusted so much. It's true. Like, you're going to trust him for saves, but like all of a sudden now he's not even good enough to be on your team.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's his name? He's now with the Jimmy Herga. It was, with the A's or the Angels, he was closing out games. And then all of a sudden last year, the Braves. That's what I meant. Yeah. He was on the Angels. He was getting saves. And then they sent him down early last year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. This is a guy you trusted for saves at the end of the season before. So yeah, I mean, it does happen.
There's a precedent. Sounds like there's a precedent.
Yeah. He's probably, I mean, now, they really had a good thing going with Miller, Urseg and Adams, and now it's who's that third, who takes over that third kind of setup role or third last late inning role. Could be Jimenez, could be someone else, but yeah, it's not exactly the best bullpen to chase either way.
No, definitely not. We will head over to Toronto, where the Blue Jays placed right-handed closer Jordan Romano on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. An MRI revealed no structural damage, so that's positive news. And then he also received an anti-inflammatory injection, hoping to quell the inflammation in his elbow. Brendan Little was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And this sort of felt like we could see this coming. I know a couple days before he was officially placed on the IL, he wasn't pitching because of his elbow hurting, and he had also struggled for the majority of the season since starting the season on the IL. Do you remember what his first injury was?
I believe it was similar. I think it was a similar.
That's not good.
The same thing where, yeah, but it's not, obviously. But I guess it's good in that fact that this has been a minor thing each time. Like, he's been able to throw 5 days after the injury, I think both times. So they're not too concerned. I mean, they're just doing these MRIs as precautions, and there's been no structural damage so far. But yeah, the fact that it's happened twice is, you know, that alone is obviously a little bit more concerning than the actual, you know, minor details of, you know, the injury and the fact that he could be back in, you know, 15 to 20 days. We'll talk more, I think, when we get to three up, three down about his replacement. And the Blue Jays, what they do at the deadline, what they do for the next 2 months is going to be very interesting to see how things shake up. But Romano is definitely not 100% guaranteed to be closing out games when he gets back, I think.
Yeah, that'll be someone to keep an eye on, and we will return to that shortly. But first, we'll head over to the Mariners, where they placed left-handed pitcher Gabe Spear on the 15-day IL with a left rotator cuff injury. Colin Snyder was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and Spear had been one of the top left-handed options for the Mariners up until recently, where his ERA skyrocketed north of 6. I remember when it was below 3. This is very surprising to see it so high, and I wonder if it's directly linked to that injury.
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it. And I do believe when we did our, you know, fastball velocities and he was down, I was like, oh, that's surprising. He's, you know, we started off the year so well. Yeah. And so that was definitely a precursor to, that was part either because of the injury or somehow it's related. And that's why he hasn't been pitching well. So, hopefully he can get back to where he's normally at, because he was one of the more underrated, you know, left-handed relievers in the game, you know, coming into the season in my mind. So if he can get healthy, that's, you know, that Mariners bullpen keeps taking hits. I don't know how many more they can take. They've done a good job. Like you said, Saucedo is filled in nicely. He's become their top lefty. And Stanek has pitched better than I expect. I think anyone expected, given that he was signed so late in the offseason. It was like a week before the season started or something. They've been treading water, but yeah, they're gonna have to get some of these guys back and healthy.
Yeah, so it sounds like Spear's direct replacement will be the aforementioned Taylor Saucedo. Alex Fiedo of the Tigers was placed on the 15-day IL with right hip inflammation, and in a sort of corresponding move, it was separate, but it'll act as one. Shelby Miller was activated from the 15-day IL. He missed time with ulnar nerve inflammation, and the Tigers were really desperate to get Miller back because the bullpen just has not been performing up to standards, and they sent Alex Lang down, and now Fiedo's on the IL after being one of their more reliable options recently, pitching to a 3.38 ERA with 6 holds. But now Miller's back. He got a hold immediately after coming off the IL. He's not pitching to the same level he was last year, and that's not something we expected, as he severely overperformed while pitching for the Dodgers. But he will be the top setup man in Detroit probably until there's another roster move.
Yeah, at least the top setup, man. I mean, yeah, first of all, Fiedo, that's tough timing for him because he had been pitching really well and worked his way into a setup role.
Yeah, and he was a guy who struggled so long to find a spot in the majors because he was like that swingman type and never really could secure a roster spot. But now it feels like he's finally figuring everything out as a reliever.
Yeah, and hopefully he can come back. I mean, hip inflammation doesn't seem like the worst injury. It's definitely painful, but at least it's nothing arm related or hopefully nothing long term. So you should be back hopefully before, you know, the All-Star break. And, you know, with Miller, and the way that Foley's been pitching, there's definitely a chance Miller could work his way into save chances. He had, like you said, he hasn't been pitching as well as he did last year with the Dodgers, but they trust him because, you know, basically they don't have a ton of options to trust right now in that bullpen with Lang gone and Chafin struggling. So it's really Miller and Foley at the back end, eighth, ninth inning. And I do wonder if that's, you know, maybe they do have, you know, Hinch wants to have a committee there. So maybe we do see some vulture saves from Miller. I don't think he's worth adding in save only leagues right now, unless you're in like a, maybe a 16 teamer. But it's something to keep an eye on for now.
Totally. And we can wrap up the injury section with Chris Martin, who was placed on the 15-day IL by the Red Sox with anxiety. Zach Kelly was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And this one was interesting. We're obviously huge advocates for mental health, but I was sort of intrigued to see that Martin landed on the IL because he hadn't been pitching that poorly to really make it feel like something that would cause severe anxiety. So, you know, maybe it's something, I don't want to speculate on what he's dealing with, but it doesn't look like his 4.22 ERA and 28% strikeout rate are the direct causes of that. And on top of that, I'm like, oh, he's a 38-year-old veteran of 10 years. It was surprising, but with placements like these on the IL, there's no real timetable, and you don't really want to hold somebody with anxiety to some sort of timetable to make them feel like they're forced to get better as soon as possible. So I think Martin's a drop across the board.
Yeah. It's probably unless you have a deep, IL spot, so you can hang on to him. He had been struggling a little bit before this IL placement, and you never know what else is going on in his life or whatnot. So, he's cool. You know, it's great that he's been able to, just kind of destigmatize this by, being open and honest about it. Mm-hmm. Something that, hasn't been available in recent, until very recently. So good, it's good to see that. Hopefully it's, something that, he just needs to kind of reset and can get back to pitching. And yeah, it's not like he's been bad this year. He's had just two or three really bad outings. But other than that, he's been pretty steady. It's, if you can stash him in your IL, yeah. If not, it's not, if you're in a holds league, there's other options. I'm sure you can move on and go for some upside guys. But yeah, Martin will probably come back into a setup. It's tough now. I don't know what the Red Sox are going to do at the deadline either. And, he and Jansen have their contracts up. So it's a lot of things in flux with that bullpen.
Yep, we're rooting for you, Chris. Next, we will move on to the transactions from the past week. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Get the best quality Dutch boy paints for your painting project at Menards. Paint in one coat with MaxBond Plus exterior paint. It provides max adhesion, hide, and performance. With over 800 one-coat colors, it's designed to work for you. And with Dutch boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s. 1975, to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery mobile game that puts your detective skills to the test. Embark on a journey into a gripping narrative where intrigue, secrets, and unexpected twists await at every turn. Play as June Parker and investigate beautifully detailed scenes of the 1920s whilst uncovering the mystery of her sister's murder. Rediscover the magic of June's childhood as you roam the vast estate filled with secrets and memories waiting to be uncovered. Gather compelling evidence and decipher clues, immersing yourself in a captivating world of discovery that will keep you hooked until the very end. Compete with friends and other players to see who can solve cases the fastest or achieve the highest scores. Are you ready to jump back in time, detectives? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Discover the secrets of the past. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We are heading into our transaction section as we discuss the roster moves from the past week, starting with the right-handed closer for the Dodgers, Evan Phillips, who was activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with a hamstring strain. He is back and locked into the closer role, and I don't think there's much else to say there other than the fantasy value of guys like Daniel Hudson, Blake Treinen, and Alex Vesia falls a little.
Yeah, I mean, in standard leagues, those guys don't really have much value anymore. Holds leagues are still valuable. But yeah, you know, Phillips, I think he came back, got a save right away. Mm-hmm. He should be, yeah, he's all set. He's ready to go.
Yeah, and he pitched really well before the injury. 0.61 ERA and 31% strikeout rate. He's on one of the best teams in baseball. And with the rest of that bullpen there to support him, guys that they can trust, they can just lock Phillips into the closer role and have everybody else pitch the high leverage stuff outside of the ninth. So I think Phillips is going to be one of the safest closers in baseball. We'll move over to the Royals, who recalled Will Klein from the minors. We talked about him earlier this year as an interesting prospect for the team, and he hasn't pitched too great since being recalled across the whole season. He had a previous stint in the majors, but he's only thrown three innings, and he allowed two runs. That's right. And so he's got a 6 ERA, but it comes with a negative 0.19 FIP. So that's pretty cool. The weird part is, after being a guy who struck out tons of batters from 2021 through 2023 in the minors, this year in the minors, 8.87 strikeouts per nine, that's a 24% strikeout rate. So it's a little concerning, especially because his walk rate hasn't fallen at all. He's still walking 14% of the batters he faces, but in the majors, it's been, you know, more of the usual 38.5% strikeout rate, 0% walk rate. Obviously, small sample size stands there, but I think Will Klein is somebody that's very interesting in a very, very thin Royals bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, it's very thin, and John Schreiber has not been pitching well lately, and he's still like their go-to eighth inning guy, and they're going to have to, you know, they have Zerpa, who's not that good either. You know, I'm sure they were hoping for more from Stratton and Nick Anderson. That hasn't happened. They're definitely in the market. They're going to add at least, I would say, two relievers at the deadline, the way that they're, you know, they're in this thing right now. They're in the playoff race. They're going to be aggressive. So yeah, but for now, you know, Klein could work his way into a, you know, some sort of setup role. It definitely has the tools for it. Stuff's there. It's just, yeah, the consistency and getting that walk rate down, which is like, you know, the thing for all these, you know, young prospect relievers who come up. Mm-hmm. It's almost always, you know, either health or, you know, command, consistency, or both, which is the case for Ben Joyce, who also was recalled.
Yeah, yeah, sure. We can transition right to that. The Angels recalled Ben Joyce from the minors. It was in a corresponding move to Reed Detmers being surprisingly optioned to the minors. But Joyce was once a big name and still should be, though I feel like he's a little bit forgotten after having so much hype surrounding him on draft day when he was just a huge fastball arm in college. He hasn't really dominated at Double A this year, 4.26 ERA. However, 43% strikeout rate. And I think it's sort of the same thing here with Klein, where it's like Joyce is going to strike out a ton of guys. He's going to walk a ton of guys, and he's going to have incredible stuff. And he's really young, so he's going to be inconsistent with his command in general. But I don't see why he shouldn't be one of the top options in this bullpen going forward, as long as he's in the majors. He did get a hold yesterday too, so it looks like they will be trusting him in high leverage situations. And I definitely think in holds leagues, Ben Joyce is somebody to consider at the very least.
Yeah, definitely a high upside. There's risk there, but high upside play. Yeah, he's throwing right into the eighth inning with Matt Moore getting a save yesterday as Estevez was off. But yeah, Joyce has, if you look at the numbers, AAA, just overall for the season, it doesn't look great, but, I tweeted this out. Yeah. He had been really good over his last 10 outings before getting called up for 21-3 strikeout to walk ratio and allowing just two runs and four hits over 11.1 innings. So yeah, those are dominating numbers. And hopefully he can carry that over. He didn't get a strikeout last night. But, you know, the stuff's he's still hitting 100 on average. He's just living at 100. So, you know, that's always going to, yeah, you know, perk your ears up. And if he just can, you know, keep that walk rate to 10% or under 10%, he'll be fine as long as he's, you know, throwing strikes. So, yeah, well, it's definitely a fun high upside play if you're, you know, looking for that type of thing on your roster. Opportunities there, and who knows, you know, saves after the deadline. Estevez is a free agent to be. Matt Moore could also be traded, so that closer role could open up in August.
Interesting. I was at a brewery last night doing trivia, and I was there with my housemate, and they awesomely had MLB Network on every single TV. That was really cool. And then I just saw Ben Joyce pitching, and so I, like, you know, tapped my housemate. And I was like, hey, look, this guy throws 100 miles per hour. The first pitch he throws was 103 dotted on the outside edge, and he was just like, whoa. I was like, yeah, that guy's legit. Yeah, Ben Joyce is pretty dope. We can move over to the Mets, who activated Drew Smith from the 15-day IL. He missed some time with shoulder inflammation. And we've discussed the Mets bullpen a little bit, but it feels like Drew Smith is going to be one of the top setup options, if not above Adam Ottavino. I don't see why he wouldn't be. Pitched to a 2.53 ERA before the injury and including his first appearance back with a 24.5% strikeout rate. He's like a Holly version of a reliever. He's never going to be a closer, and he's never going to really blow up your ratios, but he's fine. I think he's a decent option, especially in holds leagues.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much summarizes Drew Smith. Not flashy, not a ton of strikeouts, but yeah, he's never really, you know, his ERA is never, you know, it's never going to kill you. It's, you know, pretty good whips around the board. Yeah, I think he's, you know, a fine option. He probably should be, you know, higher in the ladder than Adam Ottavino, but they do love Ottavino there. Even after, you know, he's been struggling, they've still been kind of forcing him out there in high leverage spots. And, I don't know if they're ready to quit him yet. But, I think Smith could definitely challenge him.
Yep. And then our next transaction is Cubs reliever Adbert Alzolay, who was transferred to the 60-day IL. He's been dealing with a flexor strain, and he's already been out for 3 weeks and has yet to begin throwing. So it probably doesn't affect his timeline that much, but this means he won't be able to return until around the All-Star break. I'd expect it to be after, but this is not great news for Alzolay, who was really struggling this year and is trying to work his way back to the team. But I think this should give us confidence that Hector Neris is going to hold on to this role through at least the first half of the season.
Yeah, I know Julian Merriweather is throwing again, but yeah, it seems like it's going to be Neris's job for at least until they make a move or, something else happens. So Neris has been a little bit better recently. Still not super high on him long term, but yeah. Anyway, Alzolay, it's tough to see his season go this way. Just wasn't really expecting a 60-day stint when he first landed on the IL. So. Tough break for him and the Cubs. And yeah, we'll be talking about what the Cubs need to do to their bullpen a little bit later, because they're hurting right now in the back end.
Yep. And our next transaction was a pretty big news around the world of baseball, as Michael Kelly and Andrew Salfrank were part of a group of players that were suspended for betting on baseball. Pretty wild news. Tucupita Marcano was the face of that discussion there, but Kelly and Salfrank are relievers that have contributed to bullpens this year. Salfrank was in the minors, so it's not like a huge thing there, but Kelly was one of the top setup option for the A's, and that's a sort of sucks, especially for him, because I remember reading the news that he bet so little money and was making, you know, the league minimum salary of over $700,000, and it's just like you blew so much money to get such a little profit. And like, maybe it was for fun, maybe it was a long time ago, I didn't read any of the investigation there, but it's definitely stupid on both their parts, and it definitely screws the A's bullpen a lot, because now, like we said, they're gonna have to rely on guys like Danny Jimenez a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, and Salfrank was a kind of a big part to that Diamondbacks bullpen last year.
Yeah, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, down the stretch in the playoffs, hasn't been the same this year, but still, you know, think about being out for a full season if they, you know. They lose, you know, Joe Mantiply gets hurt. All of a sudden, like, you're down. You know, you're trying to find a lefty to fill in some innings, and they're down Salfrank. So, both of those are sneaky, you know, kind of big losses for, you know, season long suspensions. It's essentially like, you know, basically like saying a guy is gone for, like, with Tommy John. You know, it's you're missing him for a full year, and they're more depth pieces, but yeah, that depth, all, you know, it adds up, especially when it comes to bullpens.
Yep. So that's Michael Kelly and Andrew Salfrank being suspended for betting on baseball. And our last transaction is a right-handed reliever for the Reds, Emilio Pagan, was activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with right triceps tightness. He should immediately plug into one of the top holds options in that bullpen. Nobody's really pitching too great there, but he's definitely going to be behind Alexis Diaz and Fernando Cruz. From there, he'll have to compete with Lucas Sims, and should be about it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And the two lefties with Justin Wilson and Sam Moll. But Pagan, I mean, before he was going, he went down, there was kind of some talk about him, you know, some, I don't know, smoke that he might take over the closer role of how bad Alexis Diaz had been throwing. And Pagan was throwing really well before he landed on the IL. So it was bad timing. It's almost like, you know, similar to like when Hunter Harvey got hurt last year. It's like he just took over the closer role, you know. It's a lot of baseball is about timing. So we'll see if he can get that, you know, that traction back, and maybe he can, you know, get a chance to close out games at some point this year. Diaz has been somewhat better lately. So it's going to take a while until we see that. But yeah, for holds leagues, Pagan's, you know, still interesting. Probably better than Lucas Sims, but not as good as Fernando Cruz. So
no, give Fernando Cruz the closer role, please.
I know, that would be nice. I would love to see that.
So good. 44 0.8% strikeout rate. He's so good. Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll figure that out at some point. But those are the news, transactions, and injuries from the past week. Now we'll head to the section that we do every week as we discuss the closers falling and rising on Rick's closer ranks. It's called Three Up, Three Down. So we'll start with the first three rising up your ranks, starting with Craig Kimbrell of the Orioles. And he's been really good recently up until the blown save he had last night. I don't even think it was a blown save. I think he was pitching in a tie game.
I do believe that's correct. Yeah, I was just about to go look at that.
But he was perfect for almost seven innings before that.
It was a tie game. Yeah, I mean, until last night, he had gone 7-2 innings without allowing a base runner, striking out 10 over that span with five saves. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's not elite, then what is? This is what we're going to get from Kimbrell. It's going to be that, and then it's going to be probably like in a little bit of a rough patch, and it's going to be rocky. But I think, you know, if you're talking roto leagues, the net outcome is going to still be positive with Kimbrell, I think, over the long term. So, I feel like he's been either up or down on this series like every week. But I think he might now be. I have him like 11 or 12. I feel like that's probably 10. That's probably right about where, you know, he's gonna be great most of the time, but there's gonna be some rough patches. But compared to, you know, the other options out there, I feel a little bit more confident of him. Just seeing his ability to strike people out has been giving me confidence.
Yeah, he's very cherry bomb esque, but I think he's like an elite cherry bomb. Where
Nick has a term for that. What is it? Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Sure he does.
He's got a term for everything.
I know.
Where it's like you can trust him, but like every once in a while he's gonna blow up and you're gonna be like, is this it? And it's like, no, that's just the volatility of Craig Kimbrell, the man. But we can keep this going. The next guy climbing up the ranks is the closer for the Diamondbacks, Paul Sewald, who has been really solid since returning from the injured list. He missed the whole first like 2 months, a month and a half. He returned on May 7th. Okay, so it was just 1 month. But since returning, he's only allowed one run, and that was in his first outing. So since that first outing, 8 1/3 scoreless innings with 9 strikeouts. I mean, that's typical Paul Sewald. I don't expect him to lose the closer role at any point. He's not going to be a guy that blows you away with his ratios or his strikeouts, even though he does have a 0.96 ERA and 30% strikeout rate. I think he's more of just like a solid guy that you can rely on, that you know is not going to lose the closer role at any point. I wouldn't expect that any time this season unless he gets traded.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, Sewald steady. And that's just something that I feel like is sometimes taken for granted. Those, you know, and Sewald's been steady for, you know, years now. It's almost overlooked, you know, most of the time. So it's just good to see him, you know, being consistent and not, you know, he's not going to have a 40% strikeout rate, but he's going to be around 30% with it. And, you know, not wreck your ratios while getting saves. I do, you know, I think there's like a 50% chance he gets traded. I don't know. We'll see what Arizona does at the deadline. You know, there's a lot of teams that are in, you know, the next month's going to obviously be make or break for them. And the Diamondbacks are definitely one of those teams. So we'll see what his status is. But I do think if he does end up being traded, there's, you know, I feel like he could still close out games because there's a lot of teams out there that are contenders that could use an upgrade at the closer spot.
Yeah, and once you see a guy succeed in the closer role, you don't really want to take him out of it because you never know how they're going to do in a setup role.
Yeah, right.
Yep. All right, then the last closer rising up Rick's ranks is Yimi Garcia of the Blue Jays. He replaced Jordan Romano, who landed on the 15-day IL, and Garcia's been really good this year, 1.50 ERA, a near 35% strikeout rate, and now he's going to be the top option for saves. This is sort of the same situation it was to start the season when the Blue Jays had both Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson on the IL. Similar situation, not exactly the same, as Romano's now back on the IL, but Eric Swanson is in the minor league. So they're still without two of their top relievers from last year. So it feels like Yimi Garcia and Chad Green will be the two top options there. They have identical 1.50 ERAs. Jimmy should be the guy who gets the majority of the saves, but Chad Green got two early on in the season. So they may trust both of them, and maybe Jimmy's more the high leverage guy.
Maybe. I feel like they're so far they've been more committed to Garcia. Although he has allowed three runs in his two saves, you know, I think he lit up a home run today. I think Adley had a two-run home run. Still converted the save, though. And, you know, he's got seven strikeouts and zero walks in three games this month, three innings and, again, two saves. And it seems like they're committed to him in the ninth inning, with Chad Green just also recently getting back. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting it's hard to know what to do with Garcia. He's one of the probably the second, maybe first hardest, you know, closer to rank, because I don't know, A, is Romano going to take the job back when he comes back? And B, is Garcia going to still be here? Is Romano still going to be here in August? Mm-hmm. A lot of question marks. But the stuff, I mean, he's definitely worth adding everywhere, because he's just been awesome this season. And if he's getting saves for this team, I mean, that's just a cherry on top, really. It's, yeah, if he's still available, go add him. It's worth the speculative add. I mean, I don't think you're not dropping like a top 10 closer, but, you know, it's just worth a look if you have a roster spot and need saves.
Mm-hmm. I don't see why the Blue Jays wouldn't keep him in the closer role, at least until they trade him, because, I mean, they are in last place. They're only two games under 500, so they're not out of it.
Right.
I think their playoff odds on Fangraphs are 18.7%, so they're far from out of it. However, if they do, like, it makes sense for winning games to have Garcia as the closer, and then it also makes sense to sort of pump up his trade value ahead of the trade deadline if he's proven able to close out games. So I think it's a win-win for both sides in terms of like gunning for the trade deadline and then also gunning for the playoffs. So I think either way, that's smart. And you can always put Jordan Romano back into the closer role if he figures things out. But it just makes too much sense to just keep him in the closer role. I don't see why they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I agree. Similar things can kind of be said about Romano if they were looking to trade him, or, you know, just to kind of get Romano's value back to where it was probably at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. Where Garcia, his value right now, if they're going to trade him in August, unless he has a terrible month here, his value is probably pretty, you know, pretty set. And he should get them a good return. And he's closed out games in the past as well, but it is good to see him, you know, step in here for Romano. And yeah, I mean, again, the Blue Jays, it's so hard to gauge what they are going to do, what they should do. Like, do they feel like they need to rush Romano back? I hope that, like, they shouldn't. They should take their time no matter what the, you know, situation is, but we'll see what happens. 'Cause yeah, Romano wasn't right before the injury, and, you know, Garcia has been so good. It just doesn't make sense for Romano to come right back and take over the closer role.
Yep, and to accommodate those three closers rising the ranks, others have to fall down the ranks. The first one is Camilo Doval of the Giants. He has really struggled this year with his command, mostly his control, actually, I would say, as he has just not been able to limit the walks. His walk rate is at a career high 15.6%, more than 6% increase from last year. He's also seen a decrease in his strikeout rate. So he went from being like an elite guy in the strikeout and walk department to being below average, as he's got an 11.9% strikeout minus walk rate. And that's led to a 4.24 ERA and ERA estimators that back that up.
Yeah. And this is one of our mailbag questions as well, as one of our PL pro members had asked about, well, you know, what's going on with Camilo Doval. And you pretty much nailed it with the walk rate being sky high. And over the past 17 and a third, it's at 17.6%, which, you know, that's just not going to work for any closer. I don't care how good you are. And, you know, 17.6% walk rate with only a 22.4% strikeout rate as well. So that's at 4.7% strikeout minus walk rate is the second lowest amongst closers over that span, ahead of only Alexis Diaz. So, I just, the walks have been, they're not, I want to say uncharacteristic, because he's he's kind of shown spurts where his command comes and goes. But I think this longevity and like the fact that he hasn't been able to, you know, turn the corner here is concerning. You know, this whip, 1.85 whip over that span, highest amongst closers, 4.67 Sierra. There's not a ton of, you know, of signs that point to like, oh, he's going to be able to turn this around. It's just, we just got to hope that the command gets figured out. Maybe it's a mechanical thing. Maybe he's tipping pitches or something. Who knows? It's you know, it could be an injury, you know, that he's hiding. Mm-hmm. Don't know. It's something is wrong. And, you know, hopefully for Duvall's sake, they can fix it. I don't think he's in any danger to lose his job. I think he's going to have a pretty long, you know, leash there, but we'll see too, because it's another team, the Giants. I don't know. There's a lot of interesting bullpen pieces there, and do they move some of the, do the Rogers brothers get moved potentially, or do they hold on to everyone? You know, at the deadline, and who would take over the closer role? I have no idea because there's so many good options. So he's been the one, like, kind of, you know, outlier in that bullpen. He's been the one bad, you know, piece, and that's not what you want from your closer.
You remember when he did this last year, right?
I want to say, yeah, because I was it about this time too, or like,
no, it was late in the season.
It was late. Thought. Oh yeah, maybe yeah, because I mean he does go through these spurts. I do remember maybe he had something in May or June. I was able to pick him up in a league. It's a shallower league, that it's a points league where relievers aren't that valued, but he was dropped and I picked him up and he had that really good run in like June, July or something. And then, yeah, so he did start to struggle in like August, September. I do remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. And we could not figure out what it was because he just stopped striking guys out. He couldn't locate the ball. He was just getting crushed. So that's it feels similar to that. But when I hear, you know, guys got an increased walk rate, the first thing my mind goes to is, oh, he must not be throwing the ball in the zone more as much as he did before. Actually, he's throwing the ball in the zone more often than he did last year. Okay, then maybe batters aren't swinging out of the zone as often. Check out the O-swing, exactly the same as last year, just a difference of 0.4%. So batters aren't swinging out of the zone as often. Are they making more contact out of the zone, maybe, which is forcing him to like keep living out there, and maybe they're fouling stuff off. Nope, 41% O contact rate. So I'm like, what's going on? Like, what's happening? So if you look at the location of his pitches, I think that's the biggest tell you get. The slider, obviously, you want it to be located low, and so that's great. He's seen the low location on his slider increase by more than 12%. That's a good thing. You want to place your sliders low in the zone. Makes sense with breakers. Then you go to his cutter and his sinker, his two upper 90s pitches, and these are pitches he usually lives up in the zone with. We saw last year the cutter had a 55% high location and a 17% low location. Those numbers have almost flipped this year as he's throwing just 26% of his cutters high and half of them low, which I think for one thing that makes him more hittable, and for another, I think that probably just has batters laying off the slider, maybe, because the sinker is also being placed low, and that one sort of makes sense if you're trying to get ground balls, but he's throwing them low more often than he did in the past. So it's really difficult to figure out why exactly that would lead to more walks in general, but I think it is a clear difference from last year.
Yeah, I mean, his cutter, you know, heat map right now is all, it's kind of gross. It's all over the place. I think that makes a lot of sense, that it's just, you know, if his, and that cutter is his default fastball, if he's not able to locate that at the top of the zone consistently, he's gonna run into problems. It's, you know, partially it's gonna be walks, partially it's gonna be he's gonna get hit a little bit harder. And that's pretty much been the combination that's let him down, because he's still missing bats at a really good rate. And that's why I'm not like, all right, I'm not concerned that he's become Alexis Diaz, because he's still able to miss bats consistently. So there's that. It's just, yeah, improving, you know, cutter command. Let's see, like his, I mean,
I think the cutter, when he misses, he just misses so poorly that nobody swings at it. Or it's like when he does miss low, they're not as tempted to swing at it, because the swing rate on that pitch has dropped 7%, and the O swing rate has dropped almost 10%. So that seems like a pitch that they're just laying off of. They're waiting for pitches in the middle of the zone or for the slider to be hung. And the slider's still getting a ton of swing strikes, but it's less so than last year. So I think that separation of not going full like Snell blueprint, heaters up and sliders low is really hurting him and leading to a lot more walks.
Yeah, and for some guys, I understand not wanting to throw your cutter. Maybe you don't want to throw it up at the top of the zone, but A, it's worked for him in the past, and you know he throws it like 100 miles per hour. So it's you got the velo to live up there. So you know, don't be afraid. You shouldn't be afraid to throw high cutters. And yeah, that could be a change. Hopefully, hopefully we see something in the second half from him. I'm not totally out yet, but there's definitely some concerns, and it's just not what you had asked for when you drafted him. He was going like 60th overall, I believe was his ADP at the start of this before the season started. So, this has been a letdown for sure.
Yeah, that's Camilo Doval. I think it inspires a little bit of confidence that it's like location based, but that can also be related to mechanics or an injury. So definitely keep an eye there. Hopefully some news comes out in regards to why he's pitching like that, and we can get a better idea of how to value him going forward. The next closer falling down the ranks, my guy, David Bednar, is falling down the ranks. I finally wrote that David Bednar article.
I did.
And I'm trying to remember what I wrote. No, I'm joking. <All right. laughs> the first thing, though, what I do remember the most, did you even know David Bednar pitched for the Padres?
I did. He was part of what was the trade?
Joe Musgrove.
Musgrove, right. Yeah. He was like kind of the big piece in that at the end of the day. Who else? I don't know who else they got back, but yeah, Bednar ended up being their most valuable player in that return.
Yeah, definitely. But it looks like the problem with Bednar right now is his fastball. I mean, the fastball still got the great shape on it, but the location has been poor, and I think that's pretty much exactly what it is. His high location has fallen over 13%. Meaning all of those pitches are landing low or in the middle of the zone and are getting crushed, like batting average above 300, ICR rate near 50%, a barrel rate over 14%. And that's his most thrown pitch. So it's like the level of contact quality across his arsenal is going to be outsized, is going to be affected more so by that fastball because it's the largest sample of his pitches thrown. And you can really like look at just some strike zone plots from last year compared to this year. And you can look at like, for example, September 17th of last year, he's facing the Yankees. He struck out the side in that one. And you can see just only one fastball landed below the high location and was right down the middle. Everything else was up. And then you look like to this year when he on April 9th, when he recorded just one out and surrendered four runs on three hits and a walk in what was his worst outing of the year. You can see not only are not all of his pitches at the top of the zone, the fastballs, but the ones that are way above the zone and then the ones that aren't are either right down the middle or low. Like he threw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pitches below the high location after being a guy who would never, ever do with that. So I think it's clearly his command that's the problem. And what that I think this just goes back to Camilo Doval. Is it an injury thing, which he was dealing with an injury to start the season, so it's a possibility there that maybe he never recovered from that, or maybe it's just a mechanics thing. The fact that all of the metrics are still there to suggest the fastball is still really good and the rest of his arsenal is performing well, I think gives me confidence that he'll be able to bounce back, but he clearly needs to get that fastball up.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I'm listening to you, but I also just was looking at an article about Camilo Doval, and there was an article that came out in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday, and this is what they said. The cutter is not being located up in the zone as much. And Doval and the coaching staff would like to keep they're trying so that him and the coaching staff are working to get that cutter back at the top of the zone. And like you said, with Bednar, same thing. It's like, that's a guy who throws hard. He's fastball splitter. You want to be able to keep that fastball top of the zone and get hitters to chase the fastball off of it or chase the splitter off the fastball. So, they're similar. I'm a little bit more, I think, concerned with Bednar. just because the swing and miss stuff hasn't been there like it has been for Duvall. It's kind of been, you know, I thought Bednar was having a really good May. I'm like, oh, the whip's at 1.05, got a good ERA in May. And then it's like, wait, he's only got an 18.4% strikeout rate and a 9.2% swinging strike rate. Like, this is still not David Bednar.
Yeah, so, I mentioned that in my article, too, because I was like, he's turning it around. But if you look at the underlying metrics, it's still the same Bednar that was pitching in April.
Yeah, and that's like, the surface metrics look fine. They didn't hurt you. But yeah, there's still some concerns here. So I don't know. This might be a situation where you sell if you can. But I'm not, like you said, if he starts locating the fastball up in the zone better, I'm not totally out on him just because of the history and what we've seen from him in the past. So it's not a totally, impossible situation for him to overcome, but concerning nonetheless with Bednar. And I do wonder, the Pirates have been, there's been rumors of trading him away for how many years now? Like, are they like, did they screw up? should they have dealt him this offseason? I wonder. They might have missed the boat there, but we'll see. Maybe they try to get something for him this deadline. Cause I still don't think the Pirates are, I know they have Skeens and Jared Jones, but I don't know. Are they going to win the next 2 years with the lineup they have? They would have to make some serious moves to make that a contending lineup.
Yeah, that'll definitely be something interesting to watch in June around the, or in July around the trade deadline. And the last closer falling down the ranks is Michael Kopech. I saw you dropped him in our home league. I picked him up. He immediately got a loss and got me minus points. So that was cool. He's not been great this year, and he's really been the closer version of what Nick deems a hipster, a headache inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster. He's used inconsistently in terms of when he's being pitched in games. Sometimes they use him high leverage, sometimes they use him as a closer, sometimes he's really dominant, and other times he just gives up home runs to the first batter he faces. So it's really hard to roster him with the inconsistencies there. On top of that, he pitches for the worst team in baseball, so there's not really many saves to go around anyway. So the inconsistent usage makes that even more of a headache inducing pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect, that term perfectly applies to Michael Kopech. He's got 5 saves on the year. It's just like, I got excited, and I still think that there's a really good reliever here. I don't know, again, probably not going to be with the White Sox. I think there's going to be a market for him at the deadline. I don't see why there wouldn't be. There's definitely teams out there that see, him throwing 100 miles per hour and having a pretty good slider that, can they'll think they can fix him, and you get a year and a half of good usage from him. But I think for save leagues, I don't think there's going to be any value here. I think really the only value from him is going to be in holds leagues if or when he gets traded and hopefully lands in a better spot than where he's at right now.
Totally. Yeah. And that's Michael Kopech. And if you don't believe that Rick is backing up his rankings and dropping guys down the ranks and be like, hey, you should drop this guy, he did in fact drop Michael Kopech. So you can trust Rick there. But those are the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. Craig Kimbrell, Paul Sewald, and Yimi Garcia are moving up, while Camilo Duvall, David Bednar, and Michael Kopech are moving down. If you want to go read that article, head on over to pitcherlist.com and check out the closing time article there. Rick puts that out every single week. Alongside a holds article and a save plus holds article. Great reads every week, but that's 3 up, 3 down. Next, we will answer some mailbag questions, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, 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 go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea.
ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43926-7V1.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Sean Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Texting between two different kinds of phones makes photos blurry, ugly, and security risky. Not just that. It also makes video calling, editing messages, or leaving a group nearly impossible. With WhatsApp, everyone can enjoy seamless messaging with the protection of end-to-end encryption. Streamline your messages across all devices on WhatsApp. Message privately with anyone you want. Click the banner or download now to learn more.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery mobile game that puts your detective skills to the test. Embark on a journey into a gripping narrative where intrigue, secrets, and unexpected twists await at every turn. Play as June Parker and investigate beautifully detailed scenes of the 1920s whilst uncovering the mystery of her sister's murder. Rediscover the magic of June's childhood as you roam the vast estate filled with secrets and memories waiting to be uncovered. Gather compelling evidence and decipher clues, immersing yourself in a captivating world of discovery that will keep you hooked until the very end. Compete with friends and other players to see who can solve cases the fastest or achieve the highest scores. Are you ready to jump back in time, detectives? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Discover the secrets of the past. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We are closing things out with a mailbag section as we discuss some questions that were posed to us in the Discord. Once again, if you want to ask questions to us whenever, go ahead and do that on Twitter or join PL Plus or PL Pro so you have direct access to the Discord where you can head into the mailbag section of our Discord, the mailbag channel, and you can ask questions like the rest of our pitcherless supporters did. We'll start off with a question from Aaron Asbury, who asked, who are the most likely closers to be traded at the deadline, and what backup should we add in advance if we need saves? This is a great question, and definitely one we'll be considering throughout the next couple of months, and something we'll dive into more in depth in early to mid-July. But Rick, who are some closers that first come into your head in terms of being traded at the deadline?
I think the three obvious ones are Tanner Scott, Kenley Jansen, and Carlos Estevez. Okay. Those I would say are above 90% chance. Scott's definitely going. Jansen, it sounds like, is definitely being traded. And Estevez, who knows, the Angels do some weird stuff sometimes. But yeah, those would be the three. And you know, as far as replacements, I mean, AJ Puck has looked better this past week. His velocity is finally getting back to where it was last year when he was a reliever. So there's some positive signs there. I think Puck might be okay to take over that closer role for the second half of the year. You know, as we talked about Ben Joyce and with the Angels, that would be a pretty fun one. Not sure how I think I still like Puck a little bit better than Joyce. And you know, both not, you know, both bad teams, obviously, if they're selling at the deadline. But I don't know. Joyce is definitely riskier as far as, you know, whip and ratios go. And for the Red Sox, I don't really know. That's an interesting, like, is Liam Hendricks going to be ready in August? That, like, would be so cool. I just don't see that. I don't think that's possible. Would be cool. It'd be awesome. I would love that. But it doesn't make sense if they're not trying to win now. Why would they rush him back? So if Martin's here, then it's probably Martin. If Martin's not here, then it's Slayton, maybe. Slayton Weiser combo. I don't know. It's not really something I don't think I would speculate on that one right now.
Yeah, those three do seem to be the most likely to be dealt. I think also some of the guys we already mentioned, Paul Sewald, possibly David Bednar sort of in there as well. Even Kyle Finnegan could be up, as he's still got another year of control, but he's also an option. And that would mean Hunter Harvey gets to close.
Well, I have Finnegan at 75%. That's my fourth guy. I think the only issue with that Harvey spec is that Harvey could also be on the move. I think they have the same amount of years on their, you know, arbitration left. So not sure, you know, they could just be one that goes, not the other. Or, I mean, I think they should definitely move Finnegan now. Strike while it's hot. He's also like 30 something. He's not the youngest arbitration eligible closer. So yeah, I would move on from Finnegan if I were them. This is probably the best time for them to trade him. But yeah, maybe they keep Harvey and kind of maybe even look to extend him or something. You know, he could be their long term option because they're starting to build something there. You know, we've got James Wood and you know, a couple other prospects coming up that are pretty interesting. So yeah, maybe Harvey can stay there. I still think Harvey's worth rostering in most places right now.
Yeah, no, I've got him in like all of my 15 team leagues right now. He was being dropped a lot of places, so I picked him up. The last one that interests me the most, what's your percentage on Mason Miller?
It's like 40%. I see the arguments both ways for, you know, the A's should keep him and the A's should trade him. I just think it might be hard in the middle of the season to put together like the proper package to get Mason Miller, and the A's should be asking for a lot here.
Yeah.
And maybe it only takes one team to bite into that demand. So that's why I'm at 40%, but I don't know what, cause maybe they still, they've totally given up hope on him being a starter. Is that just gone?
I mean, it feels like, I don't know why they would do that. It's like, it's like the Office joke, snip, snap, snip, snap. Like, why would they?
I know.
They do that with them.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. No. You settle into the role that you find success in and then leave them there. That's what makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe if they see him as a closer, and this is probably it's probably going to be the best season. I mean, he's struggled a little bit lately, but his numbers are still incredible. So,
but then he's got the injury history too, so it's like, so you can get out from under that. I don't expect it to happen. I definitely would say, like you, below 50-50.
Yeah.
But That would be cool. I would be really interested to see who the A's get, and I really hope he doesn't just go to the Braves for a bag of peanuts and some pocket change.
I mean, if you could get like one or two of those like interesting pitching prospects that the Braves have at the top of their...
I don't want any more.
I mean,
we've had so many of those. Because they did both the Olsen and Murphy trade, and like none of those guys have turned out.
Dude, I did. Yeah, it wasn't fun, but I did like a deep dive on like the A's recent trades, and
they're bad.
They've not won like any of them, and they have not gotten like any value from... I mean, they've gotten value from like Langeliers is starting to kind of do something.
Sure. Sears is fine,
but like other than that, it's like they really haven't gotten anything in these trades. Mm-hmm. It's just guys that end up getting DFA'd or waived, or you know, it's been really bad stretch.
They go for like the bulk package rather than the quality package, which I think is stupid because they think they're trying to sort of like mass improve their minor league system, which for some reason is always terrible. It doesn't make sense because they're so bad. You should be having good picks and like trading away players for and have just a great farm system, but they never do because they go for these bulk trades where they get like a bunch of guys that could be major leaguers and have quick paths to the major so that they can replace directly the guy that they traded for or traded away. Yeah. And then they never really have a good ceiling. I'd rather them go for two or three big prospects than get five who were one might be a guy who's a consistent major leaguer.
Yeah. And I mean, in the whole Billy Bean era, and he gets a ton of, you know, credit for Moneyball and all that. But in that time frame, I mean, the last 20 years, they have not drafted particularly well.
No,
they've been one of the worst teams drafting.
Yeah. It's like they invented the game of Moneyball and then got passed up by everyone.
Right. Yeah. They just like stalled there. And
yeah.
And then you have you trade Jesus Luzardo for a half a year of Starling Marte.
He was really good with the A's though. That was cool.
Yeah. I mean, like it's just a weird, I mean, they need an influx of talent somewhere because they need like something to be excited about. And Miller's the one guy to be excited about. But there's concerns.
Let's get rid of him.
He's just a closer, and it's not that.
Yes.
You know, it's
the war value there is definitely outweighed by what you're going to pay in arbitration.
Right. So, and then the injury concerns. Yeah. They're not ready to win in the next, you know, five. It's going to be a long time till they're winning games. Like,
a few years into Las Vegas.
I would think. Yeah. So, yeah, it makes sense to sell high now, and yeah, we'll see. I mean, like, you always wonder, like, what's AJ Preller going to do? It's because he's looking to do something crazy again.
Always.
You know, the Braves, too, and who knows? There's two teams that will definitely be interested, but...
Any team fits with him. Like, even rebuilding teams, because, like, he still has multiple years of control.
So, if you're a team that thinks you're entering that window of, like, you know...
the Reds.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be fun. But yeah, it really could be. That's where this is a weird one where it's not just necessarily a contender. It could be anyone who's willing to pay that price.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure this will be discussed heavily over the next 2 months. So we'll end that lengthy conversation there, and we'll definitely return to it next month and probably later this month as well. But we'll also return to this topic of closers being traded by the deadline next month as well. We'll go really deep dive there. Our next question is from SFJB, and he said, thoughts on Duvall. Go rewind and listen to us talk about Duvall because we really went in depth there. The following question is from Big Z, who said, please put on your Jed Hoyer hat and fix the Cubs bullpen. How about Mason Miller?
That would be fun. I mean, yeah, they could use anyone at this point.
It's just all the injuries. I don't even think their bullpen is broken. I think they're just relying on guys in high leverage that you don't want to be relying on because everybody's injured. Like, they lost Adbert Alzolay, obviously. We discussed him earlier, but like, he wasn't even their best reliever. I mean, they lost Julian Merriweather. Yency Almonte was pitching really well. And it's hard to find three guys that can directly replace three of your top right-handed options.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that they could use. It just comes down to, are they, like, is this a serious team? Is this a serious contender? I mean, the Phillies and Dodgers just look like they're so far. And you never know, because the Diamondbacks ended up, you know, winning the NL last year. So as long as you get in, you have a chance. But I think that means that the Cubs need to go like spend, you know, a lot of prospect capital on Tanner Scott and, you know, another reliever. I think if they were to go for it here, I think Scott makes sense. They don't have a lefty, and even if he can close or be your top left-handed option. And then I wonder, I mean, I don't know what the Giants are planning on doing, but like a Tyler Rogers type, some, they don't get a ton of ground balls. Like Neris has been getting the most ground balls out of their consistent relievers. And Neris usually has like a 33% ground ball rate. I don't know why it's at 48% right now. He's just been really weird this year all around in general. So yeah, I wonder, like, getting a guy to come in and get ground balls there. Pretty good infield defense, depending on who's at third base, I guess. So yeah, I wonder.
No, he's on first.
Who?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I finally got to do it on a podcast.
Oh, you've been waiting for that.
I really have, yeah.
So
yeah, it sounds like they could just go really just trade for anybody, but it sounds like you're saying go get a lefty because they don't have enough lefties that they can trust, and then go get a ground ball pitcher.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of works, and maybe someone even, yeah, like this is a team that makes sense to find someone with a little bit of term, a little bit of years left. I was trying to think of like who's, you know, it's something we did last year, and like who's like the Clay Holmes potential trade target, where the Yankees traded for Clay Holmes a couple years back, and he was kind of just like a random piece to the Pirates bullpen, but he ended up, you know, obviously, you know what Clay Holmes has become for the Yankees. So like who can be that guy who's undervalued on a bad team that a good team can take and kind of turn into something.
I think about that all the time, and obviously Jason Foley fits that.
Yes, like, that's the first guy.
He's a closer already. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. He probably shouldn't be a closer, but I feel like he's a guy that they could maybe, I don't know, they could use him different ways, kind of like they use Leiter. I don't know. There's options there. And another one, you're going to hate it, but like, what if an Aroldis Chapman reunion could be in the works?
Hey, they won the World Series last time.
I know. lefty strikes out a lot of guys. I don't know. Yep. Maybe. So, yeah.
No, I think there are definitely plenty of options. But, yeah, focusing on getting a southpaw and a ground ball pitcher and maybe some guy with a few years of control so that you can really work some magic on him and turn him into something special. But definitely focus on the teams that aren't really in contention right now. Actually, is it Colin Holderman?
That was another. Yeah, that was a guy I was thinking of, too. I wonder, would the Pirates make that deal inside the division? They probably would at the right cost, but
sure,
it might be a little bit more expensive for the Cubs to make that deal.
And you know, you never know what you could do with a Rockies pitcher. You could always steal someone there.
Yeah, and I was thinking, yeah, like Jalen Beeks, what would he do outside of Colorado? He's probably going to be traded. He should be, but I don't know, because Colorado just extended Daniel Bard last year or whatever. So maybe they'll extend Jalen Beeks. Beeks
is about to be a free agent. Of course they would.
They're going to give Beeks a $20 million deal. So I don't know.
All right. That is us attempting to fix the Cubs bullpen and trying to look like Jed Hoyer while doing it. Our next question is from Kyle Seiler. He asked, who is the best major league bullpen right now? Oh, I thought somebody asked the question. Somebody answered the question.
Okay. Someone answered it. Yeah.
Somebody answered Cleveland. I thought that was a separate question, unrelated. No. And I was ready to answer that.
What is the question?
The question is Cleveland.
Yeah. What is the question?
And then you say, the question is Cleveland ? And then you just, I have no idea. play that song that you're not allowed to sing anymore because it's very mean about Cleveland. I don't know.
Cleveland Rocks.
Yeah, the one that's like mean about Cleveland.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, something about like dumping trash in the in the river or whatever. That one. That's the song I would play.
Gotcha.
Nonetheless, let's attempt to answer this question of which is the best bullpen in baseball. Do you have the answer right now?
Yeah, I came up. I went through. You know, there's a ton of teams. I that I think are good, but I, you know, Milwaukee, I think when Steven Williams returns, that's a really good big three. Williams, McGill, and Brian Hudson, but right now they're not there. And you know, Tampa Bay with Fairbanks, Adam Clevenger, also pretty good. Baltimore, Kimbrough, Cano, Couillon, St. Louis, Helsley, Romero, Kittredge, all pretty good, but they're not, I don't think they're top five. San Francisco, we talked about them a little bit, sneaky sleeper. You know, if Duvall was pitching really good, they're a top five bullpen. I think Atlanta's in that top five with, like, you know, Jimenez, Minter, Pierce Johnson. They got depth with Bummer and Lee. Iglesias has not been missing bats, but he is, you know, having success this year, and he's found a way, and, you know, whatever. He's found a way to be good still. Not going to knock him yet. I still think Houston's legit. I mean, Presley's been the most unlucky pitcher in baseball, and Abreu's starting to strike out people again, so... You know, Hader's been elite the past month as well, so that's a really good bullpen. But my top three, I would have Minnesota. I think is a top three bullpen, especially if they can get Brock Stewart back healthy. But Jax has been awesome. Duran's been a little shaky, but I do think he'll be fine. He'll turn things around. He'll get things right here. X factor there being Jorge Alcala, who I heard, I think it was Rocco Baldelli, was talking about how he. You know, he was talking about him on the radio. I'm like, he's throwing 99 to 100. He's sitting at like 100 right now, which I was not aware of until this week. Which it's only been his last two outings, but I mean, if that's if that's where he's gonna, if he's all of a sudden like sitting at like 99, 100, that's a huge game changer for them, especially if they can get Stewart back healthy. That's really, really deep bullpen. Number two, Philly, I think is like pretty, they're just a pretty easy choice here with like having, you know, Alvarado, Strom, and Soto on the left side with Hoffman, Kirkring, and, you know, if Sir Anthony Dominguez, imagine if he could just get back to where he used to be. I mean, that's just
such a deep bullpen,
a crazy, you know, six options you have. But yeah, I think Cleveland is the best bullpen. I think it starts with obviously Class A is the cherry on top there. He makes things easy, but Hunter Gaddis and Kate Smith, what they've done this year, they've been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Nick Sandlin, Tim Herring has been really good. And you know, Barlow has been a little shaky, but he's pretty, you know, consistent as far as them getting holds for them. And if they could just, you know, I think the only issue right now I see is like if, you know, Sam Henkes could start being more consistent, they can, and give them a more trustworthy lefty. Cause I think Herring's all right, but I think Henkes is the best, you know, the best option for them when he's right and when he's like at 100%. So, but that's that bullpen, like, you know, 1 through 7 is really, really good.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page there, actually. The Cleveland bullpen has just been pitching so well. That Minnesota bullpen feels like it's got a ton of potential. And the Phillies bullpen has a lot of proven guys there that have been closers in the past with Orion Kirkring. I mean, they have Matt Strom, and he's not even like close to being their top setup option, and he's been incredible. So, those three bullpens, I think, set themselves apart. And the honorable mentions you had, I think, were the ones I was thinking of as well. So, best bullpen in baseball right now, the Cleveland Guardians. And now I'll wrap things up with the final question from the Discord coming from Alexander Chase, who asked, which major league ballpark has the best bullpen location? I don't know, Alex. How am I supposed to know that?
I love the question.
But some people do know that. Some people that have pitched in bullpens. Rick, I'll let you take it away.
So I did. I had to Google search this to see, you know, what I could find, what sort of information there is out there about this. And Sean Doolittle in 2016, when he was with the A's, he released an article on ESPN. He wrote this himself in top eight his top eight, you know, favorite bullpens that he's been in. Couple Bay Areas. I mean, he was pitching with Oakland, so they're on the list. Giants are on the list as well. And that whole ballpark there is just amazing. So I'm not surprised.
Well, the interesting thing about the Giants one is that it's changed now. And some of the stuff I've heard about it. Because they moved it. It used to be like Oakland down the lines.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, but they moved it to center field. And also I had read or I'd heard on a podcast, Dallas Braden talking about how the Giants rubber is like tilted, rotated just slightly.
Interesting.
Just to throw off, or at least the visiting one is. And I'm sure that's the one Doolittle was experiencing. But yeah, that one's moved. And then even looking down the list, other ones have moved as well, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, because the one, so yeah, before we go back to this list, the one thing I was going to say is like, I just hate like, you know, in Tropicana or in Oakland, where like, I don't like the bullpen being on the field on the side of the field. It's just, it just bugs me.
I like it as a spectator. Like when when I was at the A's game and I saw Mason Miller warming up, I was like, oh yes, let's go.
But like, yeah, I mean, I haven't been to a ton of parks, but like Fenway, I mean, it's great. If you're sitting in like the right field bleachers, you can just get right behind the bullpen and you can see everyone warming up. It's and it's a good view for the pitchers as well. And, you know, I love just having the bullpens to have a chance to catch home runs. It's always a fun part of it. Yeah,
that is true.
So yeah, I mean, so he's got the Bay Area, those two are there. And then the White Sox, which is U.S. Cellular Field, is an interesting, not one I thought about, but, yeah, it's, you know, for his reasons, it's, you know, just like the view from there. And, you know, usually the White Sox fans are pretty creative with their language. So it's kind of a fun, and I'm sure
I don't think it's called U.S. Cellular anymore.
That's true.
Guaranteed rate, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, this was in 2016 I'm looking at.
That's right.
But this one's still here. It's Fenway Park is another one on the list. And like I said, it's a good take from out there. It's obviously far. It's not from the side of the field, but it's a good bullpen where you can see everything. And if you're a fan wanting to watch someone warm up, it's a really good place to look to be too. He's also got Yankee Stadium. And that's probably just the fans. And it's a similar situation where I believe it's in right field, the visitors bullpen. But yeah, you know, or he's got Camden Yards, he's got Safeco Field, but the one he's got last, which I do think is kind of the coolest one, and you've been here, Coors. There's literally just like a forest out there that you're warming up in. And that's just the backdrop of that looks super cool. And yeah, that was kind of the other one that came to mind when I saw that question. It's just seeing that like that pond and the forest out there. Pretty cool backdrop.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's a great ballpark. They may not have good baseball games going on there, but Coors Field is definitely a good time. So those are Sean Doolittle's eight favorite bullpens from 2016. We'll wrap things up with Rick's mailbag question. As he asked, how should we treat Trevor McGill in standard redraft leagues? Well, I feel like it'd be weird if I let you answer your own question.
Yeah, because I want to know, because I have no idea. I really don't know. I think he's probably been in the past month plus, he's been the best reliever in baseball, and that's not even like hyperbole. He's just been like, he's been outstanding. He's striking everyone out. I don't know where he should. I don't know where to rank him. I don't know. I mean, like if I have him in a bunch of leagues, like I don't want to trade him, but I'm afraid to just like lose. I mean, I guess he's still valuable because he's going to get strikeouts and help with ratios, but I don't know. It's just it's a hard one for me to rank right now because with Devin Williams looming.
Yeah, the ranking is definitely hard. My mind immediately goes to, I mean, this is going to just sound just very pitcherless coded. Just my mind always just goes to Nick's list and how he's not ranking pitchers for the whole season. He's sort of ranking them based on where they are that week. And so sometimes like a guy who has a couple good matchups in a two-start week, who would usually be like way down in the rankings, gets to move up a couple of tiers. So with a guy like McGill, I feel like he should be top 10 as long as he's the closer. And then once he loses it, then we can start factoring in that. Or once we see Devin Williams return and see how that works, then we can start factoring that into it. But until that happens, I don't see how we can really factor that into that. Where I would rank him, though, I think he's definitely very close to the top five, if not already there. And in terms of how I would treat him in fantasy, in standard redraft leagues, I've been holding him everywhere. And the one thing that I have that sort of holds me back from trading him is it doesn't really feel like he has the full trade value that he should have.
Right.
And
yeah.
That's mostly because of his name, I think, because you know, casual baseball fans are obviously not going to know who Trevor McGill is. And even your casual fantasy managers who may be in your home league or whatever, they're not going to really know how good Trevor McGill is. They may know who he is, but they may not know how good he is. And when you look at his numbers and it's like 8 saves, 2.25 ERA, yeah, that's pretty good. But it's not like, oh my gosh, yeah, I need to be giving up the whole farm because this guy's a top five closer in baseball. So unless you send a trade offer that links to Rick's closer ranks, I don't know how you're going to get true value there. So I don't know. And then the longer you wait, the closer we get to Devin Williams returning and thus McGill's trade value falling.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like for me, what I'm probably going to do is hold on to him until he loses the closer role. And then when he does, you know, just bite the bullet and drop him or hold him because he's going to be a great holds option. Or maybe even Devin Williams gets traded and then Trevor McGill gets the closer role and we don't have to worry about anything. It's a terrible situation, but it seems like something where you're going to be disappointed with the return that you get if you try to trade him. And trying to sort of account for Williams' return is just going to be a headache. So I feel like just living in the moment and being like, I got a really good closer right now. He's on my team. Nobody else wants him. Great. I'm going to have one of the best closers in baseball and just ride it out until something else happens.
Yeah. It's like one of those situations where he's going to be most valued by the person who rosters him. And it's like, no matter, like in every league, that's kind of going to be the situation because he's breaking out right now. And yeah, for people who are more casual, they're not gonna exactly know, like maybe they saw him on like a Pitching Ninja tweet, but like they're not gonna know the full extent of like how good he has been. But yeah, I think that's how I'm treating it. Just kind of just ride it out and see what happens, because yeah, I don't think you're gonna get, it's not gonna feel like fair value for him, because it's not going to be like a Josh Hader return, even though he's pitching just as good as Josh Hader right now. I would love to see Milwaukee if they could. I mean, that was kind of my like hot take at the beginning of the season. It's if Devin Williams, you know, doesn't want to be there, maybe he gets traded, and like they need some starting rotation help. I wonder if there's any, I don't know. I was trying to like find some potential fit here, but like, can you just move Devin Williams for a starter? I couldn't really find the best fit for that, but I wonder,
because it needs to be a competitor,
right? Exactly. So you're the one of those rare competitor. It's kind of the Red Sox. I mean, you probably remember this as an A's fan. The Red Sox traded John Lester for Cespedes.
That was
like,
weird,
right? So it's like one of those weird where these two teams are still in it, but they're making a one for one trade. So
I think the Dodgers lineup, they don't feel like they have a lot of pitching depth, but as everyone gets healthy, I think they will have a lot of starting depth, though they don't really need a Devin Williams.
I know they don't, but they wouldn't say no. I know. I'm going to try to dig, see if I can. I mean, not that it matters, but I'm just curious to see if anything really lies. I was hoping like Texas, but their rotation's already beat up as is.
That was one on my mind too, and then I remembered how injured they are.
Right. So I don't know. Maybe something lines up, maybe it doesn't.
The Reds? I mean,
yeah,
that doesn't make sense division. In terms of competition. But yeah. I mean, yeah, division for, I mean, Williams is a free agent. It's the
need for a need.
Is Williams a free agent after this year?
He's got one more agent, year.
One more year. Okay. Yeah. I guess they would still have to face him next year.
Get a year and a half. So it's kind of,
the Reds have so many starters.
This is when the Brewers traded Josh Hader, though, too, is, you know, one, you know, right before, a year before his contract was up. So yeah, if they can find a starter, I think maybe it's a package where you get a starter and something else. But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see, you know, how things go when Williams is ready to return.
Yeah, that will be fun to watch. Oh, I could even see him going to like the Mets, where the Mets are just trying to win next year. And so they do like a look forward and trade away a starter. But they don't have great starters, but I could definitely see them Christian getting Scott into it, especially because they've got David Stearns running things there in New York. And he could be like, hey, I want Devin Williams because that's my guy.
You're going to have Devin Williams and Edwin Diaz. I mean,
sick.
It could be fun. Yeah, that would definitely be fun.
And Williams already knows how to set up. He set up forever.
Right. I mean, that was, and he was arguably better in that setup role. So yeah, I could see it.
That'll be, I think, fun,
anything's
to watch
on the table. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, that will wrap up our mailbag questions and this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you're working on this week?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. And again, you're just, you know, working on the list every day or every week, three lists, closing time, hold up, and saves plus holds. And yeah, we'll probably have, I'm not sure if I'm going to do it, but yeah, we talked about the trade deadline a little bit today. So we'll definitely have a trade deadline primer out at some point as we get closer to July. So yeah, keep an eye out for that as well.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. If you want to find the things I do specifically, you can listen to the First Pitch podcast, Pitcher List's daily podcast. I do the weekend editions of that one, so tune in Saturday and Sunday morning. I also write the Monday edition of the Reliever Ranks article. Go check that out. That comes out every single day as well. And then I also do playing time analysis over at Baseball HQ. And I have a personal podcast called Free Baseball, which we're sort of on like an every other week schedule right now. We're just trying to make it to 100 episodes, man, but we're like 97, so we cannot give up yet. Go give that a listen while it's still going. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Talk to you all next week.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.